This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This summer's high gasoline prices sent many Charlottians to a place they'd never been before. The bus. Yes, to save money, commuters turned to CATS, the Charlotte Area Transit System. Buses saw record-high ridership, and the Lynx Blue Line, which broke ridership projections from the day it opened last November, saw even more passengers hopping aboard. Now, despite falling fuel prices, ridership continues to be high. With commuters who have discovered taking the bus or train is both convenient and comfortable, and they are continuing to leave their cars at home and are asking for more. More buses. That sounds like Oliver. More buses, more trains, more routes, more destinations. Please, sir, I want some more. For CATS, it is the best of times and the worst of times. It is nice to be liked, but maintaining service levels in times of high energy prices is difficult. Expansion of service, particularly rail service, is tricky in a down economy. But if ever there was a time to answer the call, this is it. And two of the people trying to carefully balance all of this are the CEO and the CFO of CATS, and they join us this hour. Keith Parker took over as CEO just after the first Lynx train left the station about a year ago. He is with us here in our Spirit Square studio along with Dee Piera, the Assistant Director and Chief Financial Officer of the Transit System. Welcome to you both. Welcome back, Keith.
Good morning.
And good to see you again as well, Dee. As we go through the program, you have some questions or comments of your own. Please feel free to join us, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or join us on our blog at wfae.org/charlotteblogs. Already mentioned the rapid rise this summer in ridership on both the train and the buses, particularly on the buses, because that's been an area of the transit system that people have been avoiding somewhat over the years. Just put that into historical context. How big was the increase this summer, and has it ever been that high before?
Well, Mike, to look at ridership numbers that we've seen over the past 5-6 months, we'd have to go back to the 1940s and 1950s.
Really?
Back when the streetcar network was still a part of Charlotte. What's really happened, I think, with the $4 gas prices and the fact that we made more services available, is that the stigma of riding the bus has largely gone away. Mm-hmm. That where we see the greatest ridership increases have been in the areas in the suburban communities where you see the 2- and 3-car garages, and you can go out to any one of our park and ride lots, and you will see $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 automobiles parked in those park and ride lots, and people are jumping on the bus. Yeah.
How much of it has to also do with the fact that now it is, I hate to use the word in because it's so trite, but I'm going to use it anyway. It's in to be green, and riding the bus is greener than riding your car.
I think that's a huge aspect of it as well. Recently, I've spoken in front of a group of attorneys. It's probably 75 to 100 attorneys in the room. Hmm. And as I always do, when I give these speeches, I ask, how many people rode the bus or train to work today? And about a third of them raised their hand. I was amazed. And when I pull a few people aside and ask them why they were riding, and many of them did mention the environmental concerns, but it's a whole plethora of reasons, but not the least of which is the service is good, and as long as it remains high quality and reliable, I think they'll continue to ride.
And most of the buses are relatively new, and they appear to be comfortable for the most part.
They are. One of the problems, though, we've faced with the extraordinarily high increase in demand is that we're keeping some buses on the road longer than what we'd like to, because if we got rid of them, obviously our capacity problems would be exacerbated.
Right.
We're getting new vehicles coming in every day. We're testing some new types now that we are letting citizens try out to give us some feedback before mm-hmm. we order and commit to more of those.
You mentioned that gasoline this summer was around $4 a gallon, and it was. But now, gasoline this morning in the paper, at least in South Carolina, is $1.89. It's gone back to levels that we haven't seen in quite some time. Are you seeing a precipitous drop off in ridership because of that, people gravitating back toward their personal cars?
I think we're seeing some softening of demand, and where we see that is on the bus routes that are just jam-packed, where people have been standing for almost every trip. And so we've seen some softening. We anticipate we'll get those folks back.
And they are standing, I take it, because this was an unanticipated spike in ridership, and you just can't buy new buses at the drop of a hat, and you don't want to buy them at the drop of a hat, because if ridership falls off, you got all these empty buses sitting around.
Lincoln County Express is a good example. That the ridership on it has doubled in a year's time. And I remember when we placed routes in some of these surrounding counties, some of the criticism that people threw at us that, boy, those folks will never ride a bus, that these are people who have big houses, big yards, they want the suburban lifestyle, right. They'll never ride a bus, and we can't put enough service out there because everything we put out fills up immediately.
Dee Pereira, how many buses do we have?
We currently have 342 buses.
And they're all different sizes, or they're not just one size?
They're different sizes. No, we have different types of buses. We have what we refer to as coaches, which run on the what we refer to as our express and regional routes. Mm-hmm. We have different types of buses that run on our local routes, and of course we have yet another type that runs within neighborhoods, which we refer to as shuttle buses.
And because we have this overcrowding situation this summer that you don't know how long will last, you hope it will continue, but you don't know how long it will last, it seems to me that you don't want to just jump in and buy a bunch of buses. What does a bus cost?
An average bus costs anywhere from $370,000 to about $550,000.
Yikes.
For the hybrid buses.
Really?
Yes.
That is a lot of money. So how many buses do you add to the fleet every year? How many do you retire? And is there a market for used buses? Do you sell them down market to smaller cities?
Right now, we average about 21 buses that we purchase every year. Mm-hmm. The buses, of course, because of they are city property, are disposed of through auction. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are purchased by smaller cities very often.
And what about the rail system? Because I know that ridership has surpassed all projections since the day the system opened, and I'm sure that it got even higher than you ever thought imaginable because of the situation this summer. I know that you added some capacity. We added additional cars. Were they just out of the stock that we already have? Because it takes a while to order and build a rail car, it seems to me.
We ordered 4 additional rail cars. This was part of what we refer to as the option on our original procurement. This was an unanticipated purchase in response to the increase in ridership.
And what do they cost?
A rail car costs an average of anywhere from $3.5 million to $3.8 million.
Why so expensive? Why so much more expensive than the bus?
Well,
seriously.
And that's the thing. Both buses and rail cars, while they are expensive at the onset, are extraordinarily durable vehicles. Mm-hmm. A bus will carry 40 people for the next 15 years. 40 people all day long, back and forth. We run some of these buses upwards of 18 hours a day.
How many miles before you decide it's time to retire this
About a
vehicle?
Half million.
Really?
So they run quite a bit.
And what about rail cars?
And rail cars, even more durable. In fact, I was out in San Diego recently and had a good meeting with the Federal Transit Administrator. We were making our pitch to get some additional federal money. The rail cars that San Diego put in place back in 1982, 1983 are still running. Mm. So we fully anticipate that sort of experience for our vehicles.
And is there less maintenance on a rail car than there would be on a bus? Because you've got the tires, you got the brakes, you got the internal combustion engine on the bus that you don't have on the
But the maintenance on them is a bit more sophisticated.
Right.
So there are fewer of the types of technicians who are available to work on rail cars.
This influx of riders that you experienced over the last 5 or 6 months, many of them had never ridden the bus or the trains before, ever, and had no intention. They couldn't in their wildest dreams imagine ever riding this bus. So what has been their reaction? What kind of feedback did you get from these newcomers to the bus, and what do you do to keep them riding the bus?
Well, what's happened with the Lynx service particularly has been the Lynx has become an icon, where people even go out of direction to get on the train
and
to make
that.
It a part of their birthday party, to make it a part of the concert they're going to, all sorts of things. So with the Lynx, what we have to be careful with, though, is that as the novelty of it wears off, that the quality of the service remains very, very high. Mm-hmm. On the bus side, I think people, again, are making decisions about riding for a whole host of reasons, everything from the environmental concerns that you mentioned earlier to the wallet. I talk to a lot of people who ride the bus with me, who simply say if they can save 25, 30 bucks a week by riding the bus, their economic situation has gotten so tight that that's something that they're willing to do.
Right.
Versus a year or two ago when the economy was a lot stronger and people just didn't view an extra 100 bucks a month as a big deal, That situation has changed quite a bit.
We're going to talk in a few minutes about what this means to you, because you have an economic situation that you've got to be careful about as well, because it's not necessarily a profitable experience to operate a transit system, but we'll talk about that in a second. But what does this mean, the ridership on the links being far exceeding projections? What does it mean for the expansion of light rail? Does it send a message to you? Obviously it must, but does it send a message to those who would give you funding? What role does it play, if any, in your ability to expand the system?
It plays a huge role. One of the things that we do with the state, our state partners and our federal partners, is constantly remind them about how well the link service has been received here and what a great investment it has been for federal officials and state officials to help fund these projects. The fact that we can go to them and say we've got a proven track record now of solid investment, and as we expand the system, if they put a dollar into CATS, it's a dollar well spent. Mm-hmm. That's a great argument when we're competing with the San Diegos and the Denvers and the Dallases all around the country, because the funds are limited, and so it is a heavy competition to go after them.
We mentioned the $4 price of fuel this summer that drove a lot of people out of their cars and into the bus. What did you end up paying for fuel this summer, per gallon and overall? How much did your budget increase?
Our budget increased substantially, and just to put this in perspective, in about 2 years ago, we were paying an average of $1.30, $1.40 per gallon of gasoline. We are currently budgeted at $3.50. But have paid as high as $3.78 for fuel. So it had a major impact on our budget both last year and again this year.
And you buy diesel fuel.
Yes, sir.
And you actually are getting a better deal on diesel than most people who pull up to the gas station, because
that is correct.
This summer they were way up above $3.78 mm-hmm. a gallon. But that means that even if you went from a dollar something to $3 and something, that's an unanticipated expense. Is it covered in any way by the additional fares that you got because of the additional people riding the system?
A portion of the increase was covered by the additional fares, not the total increase. So we have absorbed a portion of the increase. In fact, we've absorbed about 50% off the increased cost of fuel.
So you had to put more buses on the road to deal with the overcrowding in the system and run more frequently, I think.
Yes.
So that, coupled with the increase in fuel charges, increased the fuel expenses even more.
Yes.
This seems like a tightrope you have to walk. You want people to ride the bus. This is like you've fallen into this wonderland of people wanting to ride the bus, and yet you didn't budget for all these people riding the bus. There was no way for you to foresee the down economy. There was no way for you to foresee the rise in fuel prices. So how do you walk that tightrope without going bankrupt?
We have put in several measures to maintain the budget, but to put out the maximum amount of service that we can. And, you know, some of the measures that we put in, we have a freeze on our hiring right now, and other types of measures that we can live with without impacting the service. Impacting the service will be the very last step that we will take mm-hmm. as the economy tightens.
The links, we had the fuel prices go up this summer, then they began to come down, and now we have the downturn in the economy. Is that going to keep people on the system, you think, the downturn in the economy?
We hope so. Now, the thing that I'm most nervous about in terms of ridership would be if there's some massive layoff from one of our major employers, because those are the people who use the links the most, use the links and the buses. So if we see a significant unemployment rate suddenly materialize, that is the biggest
concern. So if people start riding the Wells Fargo wagon, you're in trouble. We have to take a break. Keith Parker and Dee Pereira from CATS are with us. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by CPCC's Center for Sustainability's Smart Growth Panel Discussion, Charlotte, the Green Horizon, with six local planning officials, November 18th at 7:30, cpcc.edu/CFS. And by Blumenthal Performing Arts Center, presenting Squonk Opera's Charlotte, the Opera, a multimedia extravaganza about the Queen City in McGlowan Theater, November 21st through 23rd. Tickets at BlumenthalCenter.org. Tomorrow on this program, during the presidential campaign, both sides talked about the importance of developing alternative energy sources, alternatives to coal and oil and other carbon-based fuels. And one of those alternative sources is nuclear power. We live in the shadow of nuclear reactors, and now there's a push to increase the number of reactors in the country. So we'll take a look, give a second look to nuclear power and what it may mean for this area and the nation tomorrow at 9.
President-elect Obama and others are urging the administration to use part of the remaining $700 billion bailout package to rescue U.S. automakers. An update on assistance granted to date and the growing list of entities seeking a portion of the remaining funds. The Diane Rehm Show, Wednesday.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks here on Listener Funded, 90.7 FM, WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and we're here with Keith Parker, the CEO of CATS, Charlotte Area Transit System, and Dee Pereira, the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer of the organization. Before I ask more of my questions, put your headphones on for a second. I should have asked you to do that during the break. And we'll take a call from Kevin in Charlotte. Welcome, Kevin. You're on WFAE.
Hi there. Good morning to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions. Well, one question, really. I have three part-time jobs, none of which are downtown, and I would take the bus if I could, but sometimes the gap between the jobs is so short that I don't have time to take the bus into downtown and then back out to where I need to go. Are you planning on adding any routes to buses that don't go through downtown?
Well, Kevin, that's an excellent question, and it's one of the ones we get quite often. We have invested quite a bit in the neighborhood shuttle type services that connects different activity centers within communities without having to go to the downtown area. What I would suggest, because I don't know exactly where you are and where you want to go, is that you contact us through 336-RIDE or on our website, ridetransit.org, and I'll have one of my planners get back in contact with you. We constantly go out and meet with neighborhood groups and citizen groups, what have you, to get feedback as to where we should be placing new routes and new services. And we gladly talk to you and see if there's something we can do about that.
Well, I'm in the Arboretum area, and I frequently go to Matthews and I go to Pineville. That's another one of my routes that I would probably do on the weekends for shopping and the like. I've never seen a bus on 51, for instance, Pineville-Matthews Road.
Hmm.
I don't know if you have a route there or not.
But. Right, we do have services there, but one of the things I'd rather do to try to figure out your exact route to during this conversation is that we sit down with you and plot out exactly where you need to go, maybe have some neighborhood meetings in your area to see what level of interest there may be to provide service to you, you and others.
The place to start would be 336-RIDE or ridetransit.org.
Absolutely. Our greatest information comes from citizens who let us know where they want to go, and we try to accommodate as much as possible.
Okay.
Okay. What about this? Thank you for your call, by the way, Kevin. What about this, I think it's called Spoke and Hub or Hub and Spoke. That's what we have now, right? Everything goes to downtown, to the hub downtown, and then back out to wherever it needs to go. It's kind of like an airline. Is that the best way to do it now that we have increased ridership, or are you taking a look at that?
Hub and Spoke service is the cheapest.
Okay.
Way to do it. And what we did back in 2000, when most of us first arrived at CATS, was to go out and do a whole series of these neighborhood meetings and so forth. And what we found was many people who were only maybe a mile away from their neighborhood grocery store had to take a bus from their neighborhood into downtown Charlotte, transfer to another bus, and go back out. And to do that in a reverse could take 3 hours.
Right.
What we set up, as Ms. Pereira mentioned a few minutes ago, was a number of neighborhood shuttles that provide direct connections to those shopping areas, to grocery stores, medical facilities, and that sort of thing. And it allows people to ride for about 65 cents to go directly to those areas. So we've install quite a few of those type routes. There's more to be done.
Okay.
So we'll be doing more of it in the future.
And so Kevin might be the start of a new one of those routes.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you already be on one and not know it. You mentioned 65 cents for the shuttle fare. It's $1.30. Is that what it is now?
$1.50 for base fare. And on express routes, it goes higher.
And let's talk about fares with Rick in Charlotte. Rick, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning. Mm-hmm. With the increase in the fares, I ride an express bus 2 days a week, and a 10-ride pass is now $17. And with the drop in gas prices, it's now more expensive to ride the bus those 2 days a week than it is to drive. I like riding the bus just for a number of reasons. I didn't know if the Cats had any plans to reduce the fares again.
That's a very good point, Rick. And what we, in all likelihood, will do, rather than reduce the fare, is hold off on future fare increases. We were scheduled to have a fare increase during the next calendar year, but if fuel prices remain flat as they are now, in all likelihood, we will defer that increase. I would challenge you, however, if you look at your full cost of riding the bus versus driving to work with the cost on the maintenance of your vehicle, I don't know if you have to pay for parking or not, insurance and all those other factors, it is a rare thing that a person can drive to work cheaper than they can ride the bus.
Do you pay for parking?
I do not.
Okay.
I would ride it every day of the week, which would probably be more economical in the long run. However, I go to the Y 3 days a week at 5:30 in the morning, and I haven't figured out a way yet to make that work with the CAT system. So that's why I just do it 2 days a week. I did have one other question,
real quickly.
If I might. Not working for working downtown, but not for a bank or for Duke. I haven't found anywhere to buy a pass other than the transit center. Do you know if there's other locations?
Oh yes,
downtown.
We have locations, and not just downtown. Harris Teeter's and other supermarkets. We've got a whole network of places where you can buy your passes from. Contact us at 336-RIDE, and we'll let you know exactly where the closest place is to you.
Why can't you buy them online? I can buy an airline ticket online. Why can't I buy a pass online?
It's actually one of the things we're working on. We hope within the next calendar year mm-hmm. to have the availability for people not only to buy their bus passes but also their Lynx ticket online. So it's one of the things we're working towards.
And I don't know whether this is still true. I rode the Lynx once a couple of times this past summer, more than a couple of times, and got off here at 7th Street and wanted to buy, knowing that I had to get back quickly when I got done with what I had to do. I wanted to buy the return ticket as I got off the train, but it was going to be more than 45 minutes before I came back on the train, and I was told by a transit official that I couldn't do that because the tickets are only good for a limited amount of time. Why?
I'm not sure I fully understood you, but let me
ask. In other words, I got off the train, say, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I knew I wanted to get back on the train at 5, but I didn't want to stand in line to buy a ticket and take the chance on missing the train because I had to be on that train at 5 o'clock or whatever time it was. But I couldn't buy the ticket because it expired before I got back on.
We have more recently introduced what we call round-trip tickets, where mm-hmm. when you buy the ticket at the start of your trip, you can buy a round-trip ticket, and that'll keep you going for both legs.
So
of
you've
your
changed.
Trip.
You've made a policy adjustment,
and it's unlimited. So in other words, you don't have. There's no time limit on that. Okay. You can buy it in the morning and come back late at night.
Okay, that's a good feature, Rick. Thank you for your call. Let me talk a little about money before we go back to the phones here. You get a portion of your funding, about $71 to $76 million, from the sales tax for transit. If the economy sours, sales taxes will likely go down because people have already started buying less. How severely do you anticipate the decline in sales tax revenues to impact you?
We are currently seeing a decline in sales tax based on our projections for this fiscal year. We have immediately taken measures and put in budget reduction measures so that we are able to meet our commitments. And as I said, our primary commitment is to keep the service that we currently have out there.
Mm-hmm.
So as the sales tax declines, and if it declines further, then we will have to look at more drastic steps.
And you also get a big chunk of your operating money, I'm told, from grants and subsidies or federal government subsidies and things like that. How heavily do you depend on those subsidies for operational costs?
Very heavily. Currently, we get a huge amount, about $13 million a year of assistance, what we refer to as operating assistance from the state of North Carolina. With the recent budget cuts that the state has announced, we expect that to go down by a minimum of 6%. Again, that's another huge impact on our budget. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to have to do whatever we have to do
to keep the service. CFO. I wouldn't want to be you. in this environment, trying to figure out where the next dollar is going to come from, where the next 25 cents is going to come from. This is where the people who don't understand or who oppose transit start to have the hair on the back of their necks rise up, because they say, well, look at this thing. It operates in the red. It can only operate because of tax dollars coming in at a high rate from all different kinds of sources. So why don't they just shut the dang thing down and put money into roads?
Well, I have a response to that, Mike.
I'm sure you do.
one of the most misleading aspects about about the service we provide is who we're providing it to. Now, I mentioned earlier that we are now pretty attractive to the suburban market. Mm-hmm. Lots of people are riding us from Lincoln County and Gastonia and so forth. But the bread and butter folks who ride us every day are people who are working class, who are making around $20,000 to $22,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And those folks don't have the money to buy an automobile. In fact, 45% of our customer base don't have access to a car at all, don't have a driver's license. Mm-hmm. If we went away tomorrow, the impact would be devastating to this community. Right. If we're carrying now upwards of 90,000 people a day. So if you start doing some of the math, that if a whopping 72% of those folks are going to and from work trips, and a big percentage of them don't have cars at all, that means they don't have a way to get to work tomorrow if we go away. We're part of the infrastructure of a high quality of life of this community. I think if we went away, it would have the same impact of the school system being degraded, or if the police department or the fire department was suddenly cut drastically. So I think a place with a high quality of life needs a vibrant transit system.
When I was a kid, I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. We had the buses were run by the AB&W Bus Company. Mm-hmm. And there was another company in Arlington, Virginia, which is another part of, would be like Matthews is to Charlotte. And there was another bus company in Fairfax County. And there was one in Washington, D.C. called DC Transit. And then they were all locally owned, privately owned companies. And all of a sudden, when the metro system came into being, the subway system, they were all bought up by Metro, by the Metropolitan Transit Authority. And they all became governmentalized. Why did they used to be profitable? Why did it used to be that a privately owned company could run buses in a city, and today they can't?
The single biggest reason is because of the unnamed subsidies to the automobile. Everything from very cheap gas in terms of how that the environmental environmental cost and other things on fuel is really not pushed upon the consumer, mm-hmm. to the road network itself. Is quite attractive to individuals. But the single biggest factor as to why governments took over the transit systems was because governments recognized if the transit systems went out of business, it would have a major, major impact on the quality of life of their various regions. Charlotte went through the same thing, as a matter of fact, back in the early 70s, where the city took over. I worked in Richmond. Richmond's one of the last systems owned by a private entity. And I worked for a private entity before joining the public sector. And know there are some real benefits to the private sector side as well. However, if you simply put it out there as a sink or swim, and the transit agencies went down, if they did, the impact on the communities was so significant that the governments weren't willing to let that happen.
But I guess the crux of my question was, it was obviously possible to make a profit at some point in the past by running a privately owned bus system, and today these government-run bus systems lose money, and you don't make money, you lose money every year, correct?
I don't think we lose money every year, but I just want to explain a little bit.
But you couldn't operate on the fares. If all you got was the money we drop into the fare box, what would you have to charge to make it financially feasible
for
you?
That's correct. We cannot operate on the fares alone. But the purpose of mass transportation, as Keith Parker mentioned a little earlier, is to work with your citizens, to transport your citizens who are not able to purchase their own automobiles. There is an impact on the environment from the exhaust from regular vehicles, whereas when you have just the bus coming down the street. So the benefits of mass transportation are the economic benefits to the most needy in your community, but more recently to the whole community, mm-hmm. as is evidenced by the 24 million riders that we carried last year, but there is also a huge environmental impact.
This may be a question that you can't answer off the top of your head, but I'll give it a stab. What would you have to charge if all the subsidies went away and the sales tax for transit went away? What would you have to charge the average rider of the bus or the train to break even?
Well, essentially what we would do is redefine the system to a pure line haul system where we would only run services on the most densely populated areas around Charlotte. Mm-hmm. So we would run buses down Central Avenue. We would run buses on Independence. We would run buses on a few of those areas, but that would be it. Mm-hmm. And we could do that in such a way that we could charge probably a $3 or $4 fare and enough people would ride that we could sustain it. However, the rest of the folks who could not afford an $8 round trip would be left out, and I think we would quickly be challenged to provide those services.
Maybe you've heard that we had a presidential campaign run on the idea of change, and Barack Obama will be president in January. So what do you see as the future of federal funding in an Obama administration? Is he open to, or do you know, is he open to more federal funding? Is the same amount of federal funding, a different kind of federal funding?
Well, what we hope to be is poised to whatever type of funding he brings forward, that we're ready to jump on it, that we've laid out a whole list of projects that in the event a stimulus package of some sort is adopted by the Congress and signed on by the President, we're ready and willing to move forward on some of those things. Our Washington lobbyists are making contacts every day with the new Congress and with and trying to get in contact with the White House. Next week, as a matter of fact, we will hear from our lobbyists. They'll be in town to tell us about what the new administration is likely to be pushing forward. So I'll know a lot more next week than I know today.
Okay. Let's take a blog comment here. Lynette in Charlotte says, why is it so hard to make connections at the transportation center? I can miss a bus by 2 minutes and then have to wait 30 to 60 minutes for the next bus.
Excellent question. One of the things we constantly strive to do is be on time as much as possible. On our buses, we are about 85% on time. On the train, it's about 99.5%.
Wow.
But with Charlotte traffic and the amount of congestion that's still out there and the fact that people break down and a whole host of other factors play into it. Occasionally, there is a connection that's missed and so forth. And please just give us another chance to win your business.
I got to tell you, the trains, you could set your watch to them. It's like unbelievable how on time they are. Jim in Midland, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to tell about my positive experience with cats recently. I'm very much a rural person, as have been all my life, and so riding the bus is a little bit of a when I first started was a little bit of fear for me because I didn't know what to do, and to me it's not for the faint of heart. but I've been riding this year and on the express bus, and thinking, oh man, what if I do something wrong? This past Friday I got on the wrong bus. I was reading while it came up, and I usually go north on the 80X, and instead I got on the 82X going south. And the bus driver was like, oh, yeah, okay, we're going south on 77, and what is he going to do? It happened that there was a reserve bus driver who wasn't going and picking up a broken-down bus or something like that, and he came and met me at a place in South Charlotte. And gave me a ride back to my car.
So there you go, a positive experience. With that, Jim, we have to take a break. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by the James S. and James L. Knight Foundation, whose new Knight Pulse website hosts video discussions about the information needs of communities in a democracy. More online at knightpulse.org. That's K-N-I-G-H-T, by the way. and by Creative Loafing, an online resource featuring news, food, flicks, music, arts, podcasts, blogs, and happenings, all online at charlotte.creativeloafing.com. At 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, what new plans from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and several large banks to modify terms on hundreds of thousands of mortgage loans could mean for homeowners and the economy? Frank Sesno from CNN is in for Diane Rehm today, along with Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic Policy Research, Alan S. Blinder, and John Macon. They're economists. If you'd like to join our conversation, we have a limited amount of time, but we'll try to squeeze you in. 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, or charlottetalks@wfae.org.
I love that Morning Edition gives you a broad perspective of what's going on. It's how I start my day. I get up in the morning and I know what's happened. I know if there's anything big that's occurred overnight. I feel like I'm completely up to date on the day's events. You just know every moment what's occurred. My name is Krista Sirocco and I love Morning Edition.
With regional news, weather, and traffic, weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
We're back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Keith Parker, the CEO of Katz, is with us, and also Dee Pereira, the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer of the Charlotte Area Transit System. We're going to back to your calls and emails in a second, but this summer you faced rising fuel costs, vehicles that were bursting at the seams, and yet you were starting to take looks at plans for the future, and you went out and you polled your ridership about what they wanted. You had a series of meetings in September and October with people. What did you discover?
Some of the things we discovered are that, for the first, people are generally very pleased with the way CATS has set out its plans for the next 20 years. They're also very pleased with the way the money is being spent, and that has been evidenced by some of the comments that we've received back from them. Obviously, people now want us to advance and very rapidly advance the growth of the rail system. Yeah. But for the most part, we receive very, very positive comments from the public of the services and the manner in which the funds are being expended.
I have this pie chart that tells me what people said in your survey, and we'll begin at the top and work our way down here. 42% of your riders, 42% said they want you to speed up implementation of the 2030 plan by 10 years to 2020. What would that mean?
Well, what they've seen, and we heard this loud and clear during the meetings, was they've seen the success of the Lynx light rail line, and so everybody wants their own train. Everyone wants a train.
I'd like one to my house.
Could
I have
one? Fast as they possibly can. Uh-huh. The folks on Central Avenue would like to see some type of streetcar system. Mm-hmm. The people down Independence would like to see rail, and the folks out in Northeast Charlotte would like to see rail as well. And they don't want to wait, though. The 2030 plan takes a couple of decades. They want to see us speed this up as fast as we possibly can.
So when you have increased ridership, as you've been seeing, and when you have over-exceeded your ridership projections on the train, and then when you have this survey that says 42% of your riders want it now, does that help you as you go and ask for money?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that the federal government weighs how they will in terms of whether they will help fund projects, is the ridership and the stability and whether or not they expect more and more people to ride your service.
If the money is there, is it feasible to speed up the 2030 plan to see it done by 2020?
Oh, absolutely. If the reality is, if we had additional revenues, we could build pretty much the whole plan in about a 10-year period.
And wouldn't it be cheaper to do that in the long run?
Well, yes, because inflationary pressures on transit systems continues to just spiral.
And what is there any way to extrapolate what the Lynx Blue Line has meant to the corridor that it runs through and say, if we do this to the university, if we do this to Huntersville, if we do something on the Silver Line that you've now called, the Silver Line, which I think goes down Independence, and you don't know yet whether that should be bus or train or some other kind of vehicle, but can you say, look what's happened here, we can predict that it will happen in these other corridors and with some certainty?
Well, and the thing is that the citizens see it themselves. That's what's led to a lot of the excitement.
And does that offset, do the revenues, the increased tax revenues that have come along the South End corridor, does that offset the expense?
Well, I think short answer is yes. Some of the information I've seen indicate that there's an estimate estimate of up to $1.8 billion worth of new development that's either on the ground or being projected over the next few years in the South End. And that that type of investment brings in the neighborhood of $25 million per year in local property tax revenues, new property tax revenues.
And what does it cost to build and run that train?
Well, for us, on the for the citizens of Charlotte, we are spending about $1 out of every $4 that's necessary to build. And that's what's great about the match, having the partners out there. The federal government tends to pick up about 50%. The state picks up about 25%. So it's, let's say, an $800 million project. Mm-hmm. If we spend $200 million on it locally, we can leverage that remaining $600 million. So if we're seeing dramatic property tax revenues come in more and more every year, the project tends to pay for itself over a period of time.
Okay. 20% of the people you surveyed want to add trips to existing routes, meaning what? More buses, more trains, more frequent intervals? Is that what they're saying?
Absolutely.
8%, and it's a precipitous drop-off. You go from 42% who want the 2030 plan in, sped up by 10 years. You've got 20% saying more trips, more routes, more buses, more trains. Then we go to 8%. Wow. 8% want new express routes. Where would they be, and what would that accomplish?
I think the biggest areas on the express routes is, in fact, I think many of those folks still want just more direct service to where they, where
like one of
what's
our
most convenient
today.
To them. Exactly, because some of them now have to drive maybe a couple of miles to get to a park and ride lot. Some of them like to see those services closer to where they live or where they work.
5% want to expand existing park and ride lots by adding more spaces. That's primarily for rail, isn't it, or is it also for the bus?
Oh, no, it's all over. We, in fact, City Council just approved us being able to expand the park and ride lot in Huntersville. What, right now, the park and ride lots on the link, light rail line, the I-45 lot, fills up around 8:15 every morning. The Huntersville park and ride lot fills up around 7:30 in the morning. So,
another 5% want to extend current routes. Does that mean push them further out into the suburbs? What does that mean? Extension?
Go more places. Have the routes serve more areas and so forth. So, again, people want more direct service to where they live and where they want to go.
And then another 4% want shelters at the bus stops. Now, there are some of these open shelters at the bus stops. Are they saying that they want them closed in or something, or they just want more of the shelters that you've begun putting in the last couple of
just
years?
Just more of the types we already have out there.
4% want new park and ride lots. That means additional park and ride lots.
Yes.
3% want more hybrid buses. It's more expensive to buy a hybrid bus, but is it more expensive to operate it?
Yes.
No.
Both.
No,
it's not more expensive. It's more expensive to purchase the buses, but it's less expensive to operate a hybrid bus.
And what's their lifespan? Do we know yet?
15 years is what is the average that we talk about for a bus.
And it's for any kind of bus?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. The big benefit of the hybrid bus, fuel cost on the hybrid is about 50% fuel efficiency is about 50% greater than what we see on a standard diesel.
And are hybrid buses pretty much the same technology as a hybrid car?
Very similar.
Okay. Then 3% want new neighborhood shuttles, 3% want more security cameras at park and ride lots, and at the transit center. Has security been difficult? Has it been a troublesome thing for cats?
Actually, I was with the one of the deputy police chiefs, and we looked at how much crime or how many incidences have occurred on the Lynx Blue Line. And with the number of people who are riding, he mentioned to me that it may the Lynx Line might simply be the safest place to be in all of in the entire county.
Okay.
Well, if you commit a crime on a train, you are really foolish. We've had people punch someone or do some nefarious act, but everything's surveilled. And we catch virtually everybody who does anything wrong on a train within typically about 48 hours. And we catch them and get them locked up.
Big Brother is watching. before we go back to the phones very quickly, many people may not be aware of what's in the 2030 plan that people want accelerated now to 2020. It calls for a blue line extension, which would take it out to the train out, the links out to the university.
That's correct.
And beyond to 485, I believe. It calls for the purple line, which would be a commuter rail line, a different vehicle, heavier train, to Huntersville.
Mm-hmm.
It calls for streetcars between 2018 and 2023 to what, down Trade Street to Central Avenue?
Right. There's two different streetcar lines. One would travel east to west, going all the way from Batesford Road, mm-hmm. Rosa Parks Center, down Trade, along the uptown area, and down and all the way out to Central, where the Eastland Mall currently is. And then another streetcar route would connect uptown to the airport.
Is the streetcar, it's obviously cheaper to build, maintain, and operate than a Blue Line train, a Lynx train, correct?
Yes.
And you're doing that because the right-of-way, is it goes right down the center of the road. And it doesn't
not the center of the road, on the side
okay,
of the
well,
road.
It goes down an existing roadway, so you
yes.
don't have to get right-of-way. Right?
Correct.
Okay. And then the Silver Line, which the technology decision will come in 2011.
Correct.
What will make your decision about whether it should be bus or train or something else?
A whole host of factors. We'll look at everything from what the chances are of getting some federal and state participation on paying for it. We'll look at the environmental concerns. We'll look at overall customer feedback and so forth. So we'll look at a whole host of factors.
You are already laying streetcar tracks on Elizabeth Avenue between Kings Drive, I think, and Charlottetown or Independence, whatever you want to call it there. But the plan doesn't call for the streetcar to operate until 2029. Between 2029 and 2034, why lay that track today? It may never get funded.
Now, that's actually a part of the earlier streetcar project. So that would be 2018. That's the current plan. However, City of Charlotte's looking at potentially speeding up that that line. The reason why we would put it out there now is there's a project going on currently that's tearing up the street. And so if we put the track in today, it would save us from having to tear up the street again in a few years when we're ready to build the street.
Well, you know, they already tore up that street 2 or 3 years ago and put trees down the center of it, and then a year later, almost to the day, they tore all that stuff out and began putting in the streetcar line, and I was blaming you guys, so I guess you're not to blame, huh?
No.
Okay.
We're the good guys.
Let's go back to the telephones. Nick in Shelby, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
I recently moved to Shelby, but I'm from Charlotte, and I'll probably be moving back, and I'm extremely intrigued with the Lynx Blue Line and the CAT system, how it's still maintaining its operating with the current economy, and I think that's a proof that we have to invest in infrastructure and our travel and roads in order to continue to persist through this economic crisis. And my question was about you guys kind of touched on it with the Obama administration. He was kind of very adamantly kind of advocating for infrastructure investments and things of that during the campaign, more so than his counterpart McCain. And I was just wondering what kind of things in more detail you thought about investment in infrastructure, especially as it relates to Lynx and CATS.
Okay.
And also, I just wanted to ask also, what do you see as more a problem with Lynx and CATS? Is it the connectivity issue, or do you think it's more the reliability in terms of being able to count on having a travel way to get to work and things of that nature?
Okay. Lynx is incredibly reliable.
Well, that's a good question in regards to what type of infrastructure investments we're ready to jump in on. We're ready to jump in on the huge projects, whether, if the feds say they want us to speed up the light rail lines. We are poised to do that. If they tell us they want to see an investment in commuter rail, the line that Mike mentioned a little earlier about going, the commuter rail line that would go through Huntersville, Cornelius, and Davidson, and on up to Mooresville, poised to jump right in and get that project underway. Or smaller projects, such as rehabbing an existing bus garage, or building more park and ride lots, or investing in more buses. So whatever level of stimulus package they put forward, Charlotte will get its fair share. We will aggressively go after those things. We have great relationships with the Federal Transit Administration, with our state friends, with our congressional delegation. So all those places, all those folks know about what we're after, and they'll continue to be briefed by us.
Robin Charlotte writes, I live in Myers Park and would love to take the bus to town but can't find a schedule anywhere. How does one find out when buses stop along their routes? Is this information available online? It is not at all obvious to him, he says.
Wow. Well, he can go online at ridetransit.org. He can call us at 336-RIDE. He can actually even walk out to any bus stop, and all our bus stops actually have schedule information on them. So it would tell him when the next bus is due to arrive.
Nancy and Charlotte wants to know about revenue from bus advertising. Is it time to bring it back?
We've given a lot of thought to it. In fact, our Metropolitan Transit Commission recently discussed whether or not they wanted the wanted to bring exterior advertising on buses and trains. What we found in the research is that it would generate less than 1% of our total budget. Mm-hmm. And the MTC members, the mayors of the towns and the commissioners and so forth, were quite hesitant, because you can't control taste once you put the advertising out there. And when they saw some of the ads from some of the other cities, everything, and I won't even get into them because it's controversial to even name some of those ads, but when they saw some of those things, it turned them off. And so what they asked us to do as a staff is to investigate looking at sponsorship opportunities that could still generate some revenue without the some of the controversies that come with advertising.
Okay. Caroline in Charlotte, welcome. You're on WFAE.
Hi. I just wanted to say my son attends a charter school in southern Iredell County, and while we carpool with two other families, our trip is 50 miles round trip on just for interstate miles. And our entire travel parallels the Lynx North Line. And what I wanted to know was two things. One, if I could get a bumper sticker or a car magnet that said I'd rather be on the Lynx North Line. And second, what I could do as a citizen to participate in speeding up the timeline for the development of the North Line.
Well, I don't have much advice on how you get the magnet put together, but
make your own.
But I certainly would encourage you to do a couple of things in regards to making your thoughts known. There are lots of elected officials and others in that Iredell County area who don't know that citizens like yourself would ride the services if they were available. I would certainly encourage them to chat with CATS, to come to our Metropolitan Transit Commission meetings, and really stress to them that you think that the services will be well used. In addition, people like yourself can come out. We will be, over the next few months, making some major decisions as to how we'll proceed on the rapid transit development. Will we be able to build services out to the northeast on for light rail? Will we be able to build the commuter rail line going up to your area, one at a time, both, or neither? So we really need to hear from you. Come to our meetings and make your voice known.
Again, the numbers for direct line information, route information, is 336-704-336-RIDE or ridetransit.org. Keith Parker, the CEO, and Dee Pereira, the CFO of CATS, thank you for being here. I wish we had more time. We have a lot more calls and a lot more emails. We can't get to them. Show needs to be 2 hours. And we should do it on the bus. No, we'll do it on the train. It's better.